morning.
Good morning.
Here we are once again.
Yep.
I'm still getting used to getting back in the swing of this here.
Yeah, it's strange.
It is. Well, you're in a whole different location.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Actually, in a chair.
Yes. Not really feels like work because I'm sitting at my desk.
your chiropractor thanks you.
Yeah.
So I got a box in the mail.
You did?
I did. And I think I mentioned a ways ago when I turned one of those milestone ages last summer, my sister signed me up for a Beer of the Month Club, a quarterly delivery on a Beer of the Month Club for a year. So, and they've been good. They've been good. You know, there's been nothing like out of the park, but nothing I've poured out.
Yep.
And I was thinking, okay, we're getting close to time for my last delivery, my last box. And the funny thing is, these boxes always just arrive. They tend to show up very early in the morning or very late at night. Mm-hmm. So, like, I come outside in the morning and there's a box in my driveway. And it always says the same thing, which is adult signature required. and no one has yet to ask for a signature.
Nice. Love it.
But this time, I was watching a little bit in advance on their website to see, I wonder what the next beers are going to be. And I was getting excited because the last round that they released had a porter in there. I believe there was a Pilsner. There was some stuff I was looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I opened the box. And the first thing I'm greeted with is a peanut butter milk stout.
Oh, God.
Which is like someone's been listening to our podcast going, well, here you go.
Yeah, let's just grind his gears a little bit.
Yep. There's a very high alcohol triple.
Mm.
Which is also, I run hot and cold on those. I've had some spectacular ones, and I've had some that just taste like cough syrup to me.
Yeah, yep.
So we'll see. I have not tried these yet. I meant to give them a shot last night in anticipation of this recording, but I just didn't. And then I think there was an IPA and a hoppy lager. So we will see how those go. But I the first thing I pulled out, I was all excited to see the porter, and I pull out a milk stout.
Yeah, I understand. Mm-hmm. You'll have to choke that down, choke through it, just like I choke through the pie beers.
Yeah, the pie, well, friends don't make friends drink bad beer.
This is true.
I am too old to put up with bad beer, but you know, maybe this will be the one that makes me change my mind on milk stouts. So we'll see.
Yep,
we'll see. I just don't like seeing the word milk on my beer.
I appreciate that.
It's wrong.
I appreciate that. I had a Earl Grey IPA about, I don't know, 3 months ago. That I read it. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be awesome. I did not see that it had lactose in it. Hmm. I'm like, why would you do that? Why? What were you thinking?
Yeah, when I think about Earl Grey, I mean, yes, I get that people put milk in their tea, but that flavor profile does not scream that it needs texture to it.
No. Bad brewer.
Yeah. You know, as much as I hate sometimes the terminology and all that, that's the kind of thing where I think to myself, that needs to have notes of Earl Grey. Like, that's what that phraseology was created for, something like that.
Well, it was, I love the concept. It was a lovely standard, or classic, I should say, IPA with actual black tea and bergamot. And I'm like, this has James all over it. I must have just stopped reading there because...
You knew there was disappointment to follow. Subconsciously, you knew.
Well, I didn't know. I was just like, oh my God, this is going to be awesome.
Did you know when you poured it from what it looked like? Or was it not till you tasted it that you went, oh?
That was at the bar. It wasn't until I tasted it. And I was like, I was so sure of myself. I got a whole pint. Yeah.
A whole pint.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, I'm sorry for your loss.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. It's been a rough weekend. I haven't even tried these yet. I'm just sad looking at the can.
Oh, I like it. I like it. You're not even pre-disappointment. Is that a thing?
Pre-disappointment. Yeah. It is now. And maybe that means I just need to be a little more open-minded.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
I've long since stopped buying anything with lactose in it intentionally. So maybe they've gotten better at it.
Yeah, let's go with that. Now the optimism's coming out. Okay, I get it.
Well, you know, as much as I say I'm too old to bother with drinking bad beer anymore, the flip side is if all I've got in the fridge is that, you know, if all I've got is a hammer, everything's a nail. Mm-hmm. So if I want a beer and that's what's in the fridge, yep, I'm gonna try it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll try it. I'll try just about anything.
Yep.
Especially when I, you know, when this has been handed to me. So
yeah,
I might as well give it a whirl.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that will be my true birthday present from my sister after all this, a new appreciation for milk stouts. Maybe it was all leading to this.
I would not call that so much a present as maybe a miracle. But well, you could consider it a gift, you know.
A life trajectory altering event.
Exactly, yep.
You'll see. You'll see a week from now when you all see my new solo podcast, which is For the Love of Milk Stouts. Or Got Milk Stouts.
Got Milk Stouts. Yeah.
That will be my new podcast, mm-hmm, extolling the virtues. I'll try all of them. Except for that once a month where I throw in a milkshake.
Yeah, of course.
Because mm-hmm, I'm sure there's no one out there doing that today.
No. Podcast world. No.
I got into this conversation yesterday with someone I just met. They're like, oh, you do a beer podcast. You know, there's this brewery here and this brewery here. I'm like, yeah, we're more about the agriculture and the market. And, you know, if you want to listen to beer review podcasts, you can find many, many, many of them. Mm-hmm. If you want a beer complaining podcast,
this is the one. This is where you need to be.
Mm-hmm. I suspect that on the Discord, we get a lot of things that are not posted to the things I'm drinking just because some people don't want to hear us say, why would you do that to yourself?
Yep. And I have refrained quite a bit in as much as I can, but, you know, to each their own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was that beer that was posted yesterday? It was from Third Space Brewing, mm-hmm, which I love the name.
Yeah.
We've talked about the Third Space before.
Yep.
I meant to comment on that, but, oh. You know, a brewery that's paying attention to mm-hmm, to that side of the trends.
Right. That's a good brewery.
Understanding. Oh, yeah. I don't know them at all.
Yep. They do a good job.
Oh. So speaking of breweries, you were at a brewery yesterday.
Shocker.
I was walking around the woods yesterday, so I was not at a brewery, but that's why my old man leg hurts today. I've got my foot up on a pillow.
Yep. Yeah, I was at a brewery yesterday. And it was a good time. It was the first time it was for a annual beer club get together. So instead of having like a mug club or a coaster club, this particular brewery has a beer club. And so once a month, they brew a special small run series and can it. And, you know, that's what your subscription gets you. Plus, it gets you discounts at the bar and tap room and bigger pint glass and. If it's a bigger pint glass, is it actually a pint glass?
Yeah, I was going to interrupt that one.
Is it a pint and a half glass? Yeah. I don't know. Flagon? I don't know.
Bigger pint.
Yeah. Okay. So, but anyway.
Military intelligence?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. So they had their first get together. So they want to do an annual thing, you know, like appreciation for everybody and show up. You know, they make food for the beer club members and because it's also a restaurant and they have a bunch of beer on tap. And
does the restaurant make jumbo shrimp to go along with the bigger pint glass?
They do not. No. Oh, okay. No, they do not that I know of. But, you know, I also wasn't paying that much attention. So, which is normal. But yeah, it was fun. It was a good time to see folks. I haven't been out and about with the beer drinking crowd in it seems like years. And to see some of my old cohorts in the beer industry was nice too. So that was on top of that off, it was like 82 degrees and sunny, which was nice. Just glorious. And everybody was happy. So it was just good to see people freaking happy. Mm. And I had a good time. There was a beer there that was hadn't been released yet, barrel aged, of course, so year out. But it was called Fig Two-Ton instead of Fig Newton. It was Fig Two-Ton. It was 12.5%.
Wow.
And it tasted like Fig Newtons, like soaked in brandy and brown sugar syrup.
Wow.
Yeah. It was intense.
It sounds like something I'd want a small glass of, but something I'd really like to try.
Well, that's exactly what I did. I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, just give me a snort of this. Yeah.
You don't want a pint or a large pint of that one.
Right. No, exactly. Give me a little taster, which is what I did. And it was really good. And I'm glad I got that because it was so sweet. I'm like, Oh my God, how could somebody drink a whole, I mean, serve this in like a 5-ouncer, okay?
Right. 5 ounces of that and a tall glass of water.
Please. Yeah, exactly. And be good with it. But it was really good. That was good. But
wow.
Another thing that they had there was what they're doing for their beer club members is they're brewing the same IPA beer, so the same base beer, and then hopping it with 3 different hops. So they'll have 3 different IPAs to show off these hop varieties that they got a hold of. And I'll say varieties in air quotes because we're not really sure they're varieties. And one of them,
and I like got a hold of. It sounds like they found them in an alley.
Yeah,
go on.
Fell off a truck, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But the one that he decided to put on was very interesting. It was a really good IPA, very very prominent nose on the hops of sweet citrus and bergamot, let's say. So much so that I question whether it was a different hop with citrus oil added to it before it was pelletized, but I will reserve my comments until I see more of this hop. but it was interesting. It was good. So, that brings to mind as he was talking about, hey, check out this new hop variety. I'm like, oh, great. I'm like, there's going to be people scrambling all over the place to change hop varieties in their hop yards now, right?
Yep.
But I say now like it's a new thing, right? It's not a new thing. People are doing this all the time, and 'tis the season for people to say, hey, is anybody growing this? Or have you ever grown that? And like on the Discord, be like, oh, yeah, I had that. I ripped it out. Or, meh, I don't know what to do with it. I don't have a market for it. So I thought we could segue into talking about changing varieties in your hop yard and what to consider when doing that. Because from what I've seen, it's the due diligence that's performed to make that determination is usually over a beer. Yeah, I'm going to change a variety, right? What does that actually mean? Certainly if you're doing this more than a hobby scale. So what are the ramifications to your business and your plan? And how do you lay that out in the hop yard, like timeline wise, what's that look like? How do you do this? Smart. So I thought we could talk about that today.
I think it's a great idea. You mentioned changing the varieties out for whatever your own, you know, hey, is anyone using this? There's the flip side too. There are brewers saying, hey, you know, do you have any of this?
Right.
Are you going to have any, you know, your harvest is coming up in 3 or 4 months. Are you going to have any of this?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a whole different topic to talk about, you know, when to trust the promises of purchases from your brewer and make changes to your operation based on what they're asking for.
Correct.
Especially over a beer.
Especially when they ask, are you going to have any of this fall? And you're like, no, I can have some for you in 3 years. Are you still interested?
Right.
So it's like, I don't know if that's a leading indicator. It's a trailing indicator, big time. So let's be cautious of that.
But
what is the, you know, what are those things that we need to consider? And I think before we jump into the talking about the technical field aspect of how one does this, getting to the determination of should I do this, and then I am going to do this, is focused solely on the business aspect of it. I want to do this. I think I need to do this for whatever reason. Can I afford to?
And can I afford not to?
So how does one, what are the things one needs to consider when making that calculation, do you think?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, shouldn't the first thing always be the why? Why is this even a consideration in the first place?
Well, of course. And I'm assuming we've gotten past that. So it's like, for whatever reason, they believe that they need to make this change, right? So, okay, you're going to make this change. What does that mean for your business? What do you have to take into account if you're going to do that? Well, the first thing I think of is, assuming you're not expanding your yard, which is a different thing. I'm talking about, like, okay, I'm going to change varieties. That means you're taking something out of production. So you're taking a part of your field out of production. And what does that mean? And for how long, right? So it's like, okay, I'm taking this out of production for, you know, 2 years. If I'm really, really good, 3 years or more, if I'm meh, before I get enough crop I can do anything with, right? So it's like, what does that do to your...
Well, to your bottom line.
To your bottom line. But then also, what does it do to your schedule?
Yeah, all your processes change because you're not treating that part of the field the way you're treating the mature part of the field.
But you still have to do something with that part of the field, right?
Something different.
So your costs are going to be the same or slightly higher because you're going to be doing, you're going to be maintaining that part of the field, but you're also going to be adding new stuff, right? So your initial cost is going to go up, but you're going to be maintaining that part of the field. You're going to be spraying it. You're going to be fertilizing it or whatever you're doing. Weeding it with no return.
Right.
And I think when people, in my experience anyway, people are like, yeah, I'm just going to change varieties. And they're like, forget about that part of the field. They're like, well, why would I need to do anything with it? It's you know, I'm changing varieties over there. Because it's a disease reservoir now, because you just stopped spraying for downy mildew right there. You can't do that, right? You got to keep going. You got to make sure that that whole field is being treated similarly because it's part of your production system, even though it's not producing right now. That's a big, big stumble I see. And usually it's less with the disease. It's the weeding pressure that gets out of hand.
Oh gosh, I'm sure.
Because there's like, what's the last thing anybody wants to do in their yard? Weed. Uh-huh. And it gets away from them. And then that's the spot that's supposed to be their new best thing. And it gets the worst treatment.
Sure. Well, and primarily because the rest of your yard is what's producing the revenue. So, okay, if I've got X hours to get something done, I need to spend it on the part of the field that's actually going to help me pay the bills. And okay, I can get to that one tomorrow, even though to your point, that's the future revenue.
Right.
But if it's not providing you output tomorrow, it's easy to leave that to the end.
Exactly. And then you're creating suboptimal conditions for the change. And the change is going to be, you know, cause a lot of ripples in your processes and in your business. So it's like, that should be one of the first areas you're focusing on, because you don't want to lose any time. You're taking things out of production. You're adding extra labor to a part that's not producing. So your cost of goods for whatever that harvest is going to be higher, much higher. Sure. So how can you afford not to spend that time now? Because you need that plot to return your investment in it as soon as possible.
Right. Right. You're right. If you lose a year on the maturity slope on that particular part of the yard because it's not your priority, that's a killer.
Right.
So why bother?
Well, I mean, there's the technical aspect, right? It's like, I've been trying to grow these CTZ for 5 years and they just are full of downy mildew and I can't do anything with it, right? It's like, why? There's a point at which you're just like, why bother? Because it's not going to ever return anything anyway, so I need to change. I don't know if it's the most common reason, but it's pretty, pretty common reason.
I have to imagine it is that what you're growing there simply is not working.
Right.
And that's why you switch it out. With the second most common reason probably being demand. And hey, we're not growing X and everyone seems to want X, and I hope they still want X in 3 years.
That's a good point, because I think to your earlier point of, hey, you know, I want this. Are you going to have it this fall? No, but I can have it in 3 years. you know, brewers can't think that far in advance. So how are you going to know? You're still taking a gamble. I mean, you're like,
you are.
So the new varieties that have been released in the last few years from the USDA, right? Triumph and
Vista.
And when Triumph came out, people were like, oh my God, I'm going to put this stuff in. Hey, it's a new variety. And I'm like, yeah, it's a new variety. It came out of the USDA. It was born and bred in the Pacific Northwest. And just because it's new and it's an open market variety there. I saw so many people chasing it to get it into their hop yards with no understanding of its performance. And for many people, it turned out to be a massive dud. Mm-hmm. So you went through all of this. I'm going to assume you went through all of this work to prep your field correctly, right, or smartly. And now you put in a variety because it was the new thing. And we know brewers like new, but nobody had a track record with it. And nobody understood what the brewing qualities, you know, did the brewing qualities match the needs of the brewer, brewing community? Did that anybody ever ask that?
No, because it was cool.
Exactly. And so now you're left with, you know, an acre of Triumph that nobody wants. And it took you how long to get that in there and get it established and what was in there before. So I'm going to say shame on you for not, you know, doing your due diligence on figuring out what it is that you need for that. So we're going to assume the same thing. Let's say the same thing's going to happen with Vista, right? It's from what I've heard from Vista, it's like, oh, it's bred from Triple Pearl and everybody loves Triple Pearl. Right. Grow Triple Pearl. Triple Pearl grows awesome. And from what I've seen of like Vista, it's not all that much different in its aroma and flavor profile, but it's new, right? So I just ask yourself why you're making that change. If it's because of performance, okay, great. That's a totally normal thing to do. Then what are you changing it out for? That question is the hard question.
Yeah.
Don't just chase the new variety because it's new when we know that brewers are fickle and the market changes so quickly. Just because it's new doesn't mean it's going to last, like, at all. I mean, even Citra was on the market for years and years and years before it caught on. And it required it didn't catch on because it's such an awesome hop. It caught on because it fit the boom in the beer trend at the time.
Sure.
So it's kind of a gamble.
It absolutely is. Yeah. It absolutely is. And unless what you're doing is adding in a variety you've got in a different part of your yard that you know is working for you.
Yeah.
Although even then, if that variety falls out of favor, now your eggs are larger in a particular basket. So mm-hmm. I guess it's always a gamble.
That's farming, right?
well, sure. And you know, I wonder, I think about the fact that, you know, I know over the years we were pulling out and putting in different varieties all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And is there something to be said for a longer-term plan? Because that's part of this. This is not in your 3 or 5 year plan that, oh, we're going to be stripping out 2 acres and putting something else in. This happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually not something you're planning for. But suppose it was. Suppose, let's say you've got a 10-acre hop yard and you've got 5 varieties, 2 acres a pop. And your plan is every year one of those 2 acre chunks is stripped and replaced. So you are on a rotation schedule
mm-hmm.
where you know every year you're going to be removing and replanting in order to keep your varieties on a rotational basis. Is there any – I mean, then it's in your budget. It's in your plan.
Right.
But it's kind of a suboptimal plan versus a mature hop yard.
Correct. If we look at the industry, I think we find that that's not uncommon. It's not mm-hmm. every year they're doing that necessarily, but you know, they could be on an 8 to 10 year variety change.
Yeah.
And they're phasing that in. They're not saying, "Hey, I've got 300 acres. I'm going to yank out 100 acres and plant it, you know, to a new variety and then have that new variety not be at maximum production," right? They're going to go in and they're going to stagger that change
sure.
such that, yeah, at any given time, their block, whatever that happens to be size-wise, is, you know, 8 to 10 years old and it's getting rotated out incrementally. And that's for multiple reasons. It's for disease reasons and knowing that they just can't get ahead of downy or powdery, and they know it's going to be systemic, so they know they have to change varieties that often. It's to follow the market and to give themselves a little bit more flexibility. Now, granted, those larger scale pro growers can get a mature yield in 2 years.
Right.
So they're
less risk.
There's less risk there from a crop and revenue standpoint. If you're using that technique and you can calculate for it, then it's a question, or then it's just it's a math problem, right? You just, it's a story problem, right? From third grade, you can figure it out based on Johnny has this many acres of hops, and every year he it's like an SAT question. Was that on your son's SAT test he just had?
It might have been.
Can ask
it. It might have been.
He can do the, he can do the math for us, and you know, Sally can only work on Tuesdays. Yeah, I don't know, where was I going with that?
just, you know, making variety changes a systematic part of the process as opposed to a pivot point.
Right. Which it will also be, you know, a pivot point, or can also be a pivot point.
Yeah.
To say, I have to make a change. Holy hell. Because I've got 10 acres of Cascade and,
poor Cascade.
Yeah. I'll just change the name. Call it Julius. So that was a brewer bitch from yesterday.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. Yeah. But,
poor Cascade.
Yeah. I totally lost where my train of thought was.
Oh, okay. Well, that's no good. All right. So I took us a little off. So in terms of how you plan for this, and again, I think the point is that sometimes you can't plan for this. You've got to, first and foremost, I think, look at your cash flow and what this is going to do to it.
Right.
Because your revenue is going to take a hit, although maybe not that bad a hit if what you're having is a crisis level problem in that part of the field. If that part of the field is giving you so much grief, you're spending a ton of time on it, and you're getting almost no value out of it, then by stripping it out, you may actually save money.
Correct. Because you've sort of by default, you've already can take into account the fact that plot's not producing.
Right. Right. So let's see, I can continue to try and maintain it along with the rest of the field and get virtually no revenue from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cascade, I'm talking to you. Mm-hmm. Or I can spend the money I was going to spend on that part of the field maintaining it differently to strip and replant and weed and do all the things that need to be done differently as a startup, you know, strip of my plot. But now I've got future revenues I'm associating with it. It could actually, it doesn't have to be a financial hit. What it does mean is that you're not hitting your financial plan because there's no way you planned for those couple of acres to be a shit show.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, yeah. You can see. Can you see?
I don't think that's a financial term. You see that shit shows in my finance book.
When you go to the bank to get your loan, you're like, "Well, what are these acres for? Oh, those are my shit show acres," because you know it's going to happen.
Should absolutely be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely be a thing. But yeah, so you know, it's not all gloom and doom. It's not all oof. This is going to be a hit. This could be instead of opportunity cost, this could be a very legitimate. I'm putting better money after bad right now to do the right thing with this part of the field.
Right.
Hopefully, you can see the signs and make the decision before you're netting zero.
True.
On those acres. But sometimes it doesn't work that way. Mother Nature kind of sucks.
Yep. Yep. She will bring the hammer.
Uh-huh.
That I like that concept because you're, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about, so suppose somebody needs to do this, they're going to go and do this. And we've talked a bit about this in the past where it's been, you know, how do you change varieties in your yard? Like what's the process? And that, you know, we don't necessarily need to go into that in detail right now, but as part of that calculation, you need to consider how long that part of the field is going to be out of full production. You're going to be able to calculate the cost of maintaining that section of the field. You're right. Going to be able to calculate the cost of replanting and ripping out or killing off. So you can have all of that. That's on the front end. Then you calculate how long it's going to be out of production. And what is the running cost for that area? So I think you can land on a pretty good assumption for what it's going to take you to get back, quote, up and running, right? What is this new variety going to, when is it going to yield me money?
Sure.
So you can get to that pretty easily, I think. And for the most part, with the exception of like establishment of the new crop, for the most part, this is purely mechanical. There's very little Mother Nature involved. So it's not like you have to have this big question mark about how long is this going to take or is this even going to work? because it's dirt work, right? It's getting in there and making physical changes.
Yeah, it's your basic blocking and tackling that you should know how to do at this point.
Correct. And then the question is, okay, how do I make that transition? How do I know how long it's going to take to make that transition? And I think that depends on how you choose to make the transition, like physically, how you choose to get those old hops out of there and the new hops in there.
I like fire.
Fire works. Fire can work. Takes a shitload of fire. You've got two options. You can kill those plants off with herbicide or plant killer, or you can dig them out. Mm-hmm. And you'll see the large scale guys or larger scale guys and gals that do this, they will pull them out. Mm-hmm. Right? They'll go in with a bottom plow or they'll go in with an excavator and they will literally dig crowns out.
Well, imagine if you go herbicide, you then have to wait to replant, and don't you lose time?
Loads and loads of time doing it, exactly. And even if you're using really good, you know, liquid death, hops are resilient and one spray isn't going to do it. So it's like, how often are you going to do this? The best case scenario is you're spraying multiple times in a year. So it's going to take a whole year for that crown to die off and all of the rhizomes and buds that are underneath the ground to die off. So it's not putting up rogue plants before you can go back and plant into it. So you're going to have, at the best case, an extra year and all the time and money in spraying herbicide to kill those plants off.
So of course you'd want to do it mechanically, but do you have the time and the equipment to do that?
Do you have the equipment? Yeah, it's actually, if you have the equipment, it's way faster than spraying. Okay. Because you can go down there, literally, if you have a tractor and a bottom plow, you know, those old style, sometimes they're called moldboard plows, and you can get in between your poles to do this, you can dig down and turn those crowns over really easy. Huh. But it's another labor point, right? So it's fast, but you need like more labor to do it. So it's like, okay, I got to make sure I've got four people with me so that somebody's driving the tractor and then other people are going behind raking these dead crowns or these crowns out that we don't want anymore. And then you got to go put the soil back and then prep your soil and your mounds for replanting. But all of that can be done in a couple of days. Ah. And so you could be ready to go, assuming you don't have a soil, you know, soil-borne pathogen or something like that, you could be ready to go in a few days to replant. So it's not like you need to spend seasons getting things put in place. So there's an advantage there. Even if you had to go and rent a piece of equipment to do this, it's not a bad idea, but it's not for everybody.
No, I guess it's not. And yet the cost of that rental cannot be more than the cost of a year of lost production.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And frankly, if you've got any other farmers around you, and there are any old codgers, they have a single or double bottom plow laying around in the weeds somewhere. I bought my, that's a double bottom plow. So there's two plows offset from each other so you can plow a wider width. I bought mine at an auction for $100.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. I mean, they're everywhere. So it's not like some hyper specialized piece of equipment. This is how farmers used to plow all their fields with, you know, oxen. So there it's pretty good known technology. And other people don't bother with a plow because you're turning over a lot of soil. They're using a mini excavator and they're literally just digging a crown out. And if you've got a good operator, I mean, they can go really fast and literally pluck crowns out of the ground with the thumb on an excavator and it goes pretty quick. And so even if you didn't have a mini excavator, you could rent one, you know, by the day or by every couple of days and spend $1,000 and have your acre completely cleared out with just you. That's not a bad spend of money. Mm. Knowing then that you can go and start your soil prep and replant in that same season. So you've lost like almost no time, but you've made up for that, you know, time in pennies, dollars.
Sure.
But it's, for me, that's a smart way to go. Now, if you're on a different scale, right, where this is more of a hobby for you, then you have more time than money, then go the time route. But know that you're likely going to be spraying. It's not a one and done thing. You're probably going to be spraying every, you know, herbicide on those things every 30 days until nothing's coming up anymore. And even then, you're not going to be sure you got it all.
Well, yeah. And I go back to my earlier point that in the meantime, you're trying to keep the rest of your yard profitable, which is even more important because it's the only part you're making money off of. And the cleanup work on that older part of the yard becomes a secondary priority. So do you actually keep up on that process?
Right. Probably not.
Probably not. And then when you don't, you end up replanting and you've got all kinds of shit mixed in there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you don't, again, you're not sure what, how confident are you that what you planted didn't have any volunteers come up from those old crowns? Even if you spray, oh no, I sprayed Roundup on them. Really? Once? Where'd you get that Roundup? The hardware store?
No, it's been in my garage for 4 years.
Exactly, yeah. It froze solid last winter. It was so cold.
There's no expiration date on Roundup, is there?
go get, if you're going to use the herbicide route, because I know you all listening have your applicator's license, mm-hmm. You can go buy actual big girl and big boy herbicides that will have better burn down and better kill than the stuff you're going to get at the hardware store.
Just make sure your workers know which part of the field to spray.
Yes, exactly. And that, you know, you're following proper spray equipment sanitation, because even a little bit of residual can cause a big problem when you're spraying the rest of your yard. So let's keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a whole nother issue, is the segregation when you're trying to kill off part of your yard. Typically, correct me if I'm wrong, but typically, even though you've got different soil issues and different drainage issues in different parts of your yard, you're fertilizing and you are you're watering uniform-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've got a situation where, okay, what's happening 3 feet to the right of where I'm spraying the liquid death,
mm-hmm.
needs to be in a beer.
Right.
So that, yeah. Got to be super careful there.
You do. And as I think people's growers are, as they're maturing in their practice, they're finding that one size does not fit all when it comes to their how they treat their yard, both chemically and nutritionally and things like that. You know, different varieties need slightly different things. So they shouldn't be shocked that, you know, they have to apply X amount of fertilizer over here, but over here where you just planted, you need to take a different approach. Same thing with your irrigation regime. I mean, it's like you don't want to waterlog those plants because they're not going to be taking up nearly the amount of water that your mature stuff is one row over. So are you prepped for that segregation? I hope so. Otherwise, you're going to have to go and put a reducing valve or something in so you can slow the flow or put a different zone in there so that you can irrigate, you know, less frequently or for less amount of time, but more often maybe. So keep that in mind. It's slight alterations to your normal plan, but none of this should be completely foreign to you by now. No, bad brewer.